Two of my co-hosts there, Mad Mike from the Mad Mike and Wild Wheel Coast to Coast show, Mike Ward. Hey, hey, my friend, how are you?
Wonderful, as always.
Haven't spoken to you in a while, huh?
What, about an hour?
About an hour ago. And my other great friend, Dr. Reverend Rudolph Demery. Hey, my friend, how are you?
Just fine. Hope you can hear me okay.
I can hear you okay. I see something on your forehead, and I have an idea what it is. Would you explain to the audience what it is?
Ash Wednesday.
Ash Wednesday. Okay. All right.
It's the first day of Lent. This Sunday is the first day of Lent. Most liturgical churches observe Ash Wednesday in Lent. Most non-liturgical churches do not. If you're like traditionally Baptist or something like that, you have no idea what Ash Wednesday or Lent is because they don't really practice okay. it. So
you said liturgical. Is that correct?
Yeah, meaning that churches that follow a liturgy, like, you know, I preach from the liturgy, which has a scripture already set aside each Sunday so the people can follow whatever text I'm preaching mm-hmm. by just opening up the lectionary. And they can see the text that I'm going to be preaching on for that Sunday.
Okay.
And it allows you to go through the Bible completely rather than just, you know, some preachers only preach out of the New Testament.
Okay.
And don't use the First Testament, so.
Okay. All right. Very good. Very good. Yes. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to, let's see, what is this? The Boomerang. Man, these shows are running together. We have so many wonderful shows. This one, as a matter of fact, but let's start off on Sunday. I'll give you a little bit, then I'll break it up, then we'll come back. On Sunday mornings, we have, if you like gospel music, tune in to the Gospel Explosion. Okay. All of your favorite gospel songs, and we even take requests. We take requests on Sunday mornings, and that starts, at 7 a.m. On the, West Coast. That's no problem for Mike, cause he's up with the horses probably at what, 5 or 6?
Yeah, usually 6.
It's 6 o'clock.
I get up about 5:30, make some coffee, and then by 6 I'm out there feeding the boys, as I call them. I got Nash and I got Rhodey. Those are my two horses. Nash is an Appy, and Rhodey is a registered thoroughbred. He actually is semi-famous. He has 2 firsts, a 2nd, and a 3rd during his racing career.
Wow. Learn something new about you every week, my friend. Well, every day, practically. And, yep, as you can tell, Mike is a cowboy. He has a ranch, but he's also a DJ, and he plays all genres of music. Let's say former investigator, you know? Yes. Wow. So many different hats, so many different things, and he's just having fun, ladies and gentlemen.
I like it like that. I like variety. That's why I like what you do with Studio W here. You have a great variety of different topics, not just music and talk shows and stuff, but you get into, like with the Boomerang here, we get into the nitty gritty of society and what's working, what's not working. And, you know, in our own little way, we try to solve some of these problems. Maybe it helps, maybe it doesn't, but at least we talk about it. That dialogue's a good thing.
And like you said, at least we have a conversation about it, right? And so that's the important thing about it. And we have talk, sports, comedy, all of the genres of music. And on our Thursday night show, Mad Mike and Wild Wheel Coast to Coast, you tune in, you could hear anything from blues to jazz to opera. I mean, just to practically classical music.
Right up into William and I acting a little silly together and having a good time poking fun at good friends.
A little. I was talking to your brother Warren yesterday. We had a great conversation yesterday, and we were talking about the Mad Mike and Wild Wheel Coast to Coast show. And I said, man, your brother Mike, I mean, shucks, I said, I'm the stable one. I said, I said, he's insane, man. I have a great, he said, both of you are.
who talks more, my brother Warren or me?
Boy, that's a good one.
That's a tough one, isn't it?
Hey, can I get back to you on that?
Yeah, that's fine.
No, but great times on Mad Mike and Wild Wheel Coast to Coast. And then our friend Dr. Dimmer, he's also a musician. And so we had such a great time one Sunday when the other hosts weren't available. Oh, by the way, Ann is having a little trouble. Then I'll let you know what's going on with Dr. Sims in a minute. So, but anyway, So we just talked about music, which I really love that particular broadcast. And we broke down not only different types of music, but also the different effects that music has on you, have on you. I saw something
good,
the other
good
day.
Good and bad.
Oh,
good and bad. Negative
good and
positive.
Bad.
Yeah, there's frequency, which music is part of frequencies that are combined to make music. But there are good and bad frequencies out there, and they can be used for good and evil.
I agree with that because recently, you know, I was listening to some music, and I just had to turn it off. Oh, no. I think I shared it with you, too, Mike. I just said, no, Mike.
It happens a lot.
No. So we do, even though our program isn't scripted, we do, we are selective in the type of music we play. We're not going to play evil music. We're not going to do that. And we stay away from the profanity too. Now, every now and then somebody will slip something in it, but not to the degree that's really offensive. But anyway, back to that. So Mad Mike and Wild Will, whoa, what a show we had last Thursday. We had, oh my God, Jenda, recording artist, I believe they are out of Texas, and her husband, Howard, who's also a co-writer and manager and I guess
and a funny guy.
Oh man, you guys
he's
got
hilarious.
Dr. Demery, him and Mike. Yeah. They tried to gang up on me, but it didn't work. But they are, man, it was hilarious. But what a voice. What a voice this young lady has. It's absolutely incredible. As a matter of fact, before we get into the rest of it, I'm going to do something. I'm going to give the audience a treat, because how do we get into, I had a whole nother show planned, but that's okay. Where is she? Okay. She's here somewhere. Okay.
Hey, William, while you're looking for that, hey, give Dr. Demery a little opening statement if he has something to say here.
Yeah. Dr. Demery?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, what would you like to share with the audience? Anything in particular?
Well, you had us to pick a event relating to history, and so that's what I did, but it looks like we're going to change.
No, we're not changing.
A little bit.
No, I'm just waiting for Ann. Oh. Ann was having a little technical difficulty.
Oh, okay.
No, I was just talking.
I was just going to say a lot of people ask why people put the ashes on their head, because Ash Wednesday is the first Sunday in Lent, and Lent is the 40 days that lead up to Easter. So you dedicate something that you're going to get rid of in your life. Mm-hmm. You become a little more spiritual, pray more, spend more time with God. You know, you've heard the old saying, I gave it up for Lent. Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of where the term came from. But Ash Wednesday started way back at the Council of Nicaea, back in 325 AD, so it has a long history. It's not a sacrament. Some people get it twisted. It's not a sacrament because it's not something that Jesus instituted, but it is something that the church does practice. And, you know, some people take part in it, some people don't, but it's an outward sign that you dedicate yourself to doing something that is, you know, spiritual and Christ-like. Mm-hmm. That allows you to lead up to, you know, the 40 days of Easter before Good Friday and all that stuff. So,
okay.
I do have a quick question for Dr. Demery. Thank you. I'm familiar with Ash Wednesday. I'm not Catholic. I am very Christian, but I'm not Catholic. And my wife was Catholic, or still is. And, I've always been curious, like with, when you're blessed, there's holy water. Is there some significance to the ash that is it a blessing that's put upon your forehead? Is it considered
a
blessing?
Not really.
Is there background to the ashes?
And you don't have to be Catholic to participate in Ash Wednesday. Obviously, I'm not Catholic, but as a UCC, we tend to be liturgical. So we follow a liturgy, and part of the liturgy includes Ash Wednesday. So, the Catholic Church actually instituted Ash Wednesday, but, you know, in the Reformation in the 1500s, which there's a big gap between 325 and 1500, when Luther nailed the 95th Theses up on the bishop's door, you know, talking about indulgences. So it's part of that, but it's basically just you making a dedication to, instead of watching your favorite show on TV, you'll mm-hmm. go maybe spend a little time in prayer, or maybe go help somebody at a shelter or something like that. It's dedicating yourself to being more spiritual as you get closer to Easter. It's a little more complicated than that, but that's the gist of it.
Is there any significance to how the ash is created? I mean, are there kind of practices, rules, practices, policies as how the ash is created?
Well, you take the ashes from Palm Sunday. You take the ashes from last year's Palm Sunday. You know, Palm Sunday is the Sunday before Easter, and you take those and you burn those, and that's how you get the ashes for Ash Wednesday.
So you burn the palms.
Something there, yeah.
Yeah, you usually do a ritual at the church where you burn the palms from Palm Sunday last year.
Oh.
And then you create the ashes for Ash Wednesday the following year.
Okay.
I knew there had to be something there with the ash itself. It had to have some significance.
Well, it comes from Genesis 3:19, where if you remember, Genesis 3:19 says, from ashes we came, from ashes we shall return. So it's the Hebrew word for ashes actually means dirt or ashes. And so that's where the term comes from, because when you die, we're all going to die one day. You turn back to ashes. You don't remain in this body that we have. You return back to ashes. And so if you've ever been at a funeral before, you hear people say ashes to ashes and dust to dust. Nice. So that's kind of where it all gets tied in together.
Okay.
Nice. Thank you, Dr. Demmer.
Okay. Yes. Okay. By the way, like I said, Anne, she's having some Wi-Fi problems. And so, but we are going to get into the subject matter, and we're going to talk about Black history. And remember, I sent all of you guys a text, and I said, pick at least one person that you feel that made a major, major Black person that made a major contribution to society. And Mike texted me back. He said, well, since we have 2 hours, why don't we pick two? So I wanted to wait until Ann came on. Plus, I have a special guest that might come on, because I have an announcement for a brand new show that's coming Tuesday. But I want to share with, since we were talking a little bit about music before, and you guys, you know how I transition sometimes, but we are going to get into the main subject, because we have less than a couple of weeks to go, and we really haven't talked about Black history, and so I want to do that. But before we do that, and there is also Black history's music. I mean, let's think about this. Deeply rooted in Black culture, you know, going all the way back to Africa, you know, did you guys know that the banjo was created in Africa first? The banjo was.
I didn't know that, but I believe it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Sure. Oh, absolutely. And there are a lot of instruments, and they have been a lot of them have been modernized. But a lot of your instruments were created out in Africa.
So were the bagpipes.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Whoa. I thought that was a Scottish invention.
Nope. They want to claim it, but it's not.
Okay. Hey, thank you, Dr. Demery.
And being of Scots heritage, I believe that. I've heard that before, and I do believe it once again. And my mother was a Mackenzie fresh off the boat from Scotland. So, I've heard it before. I think it's probably true.
You know, this is what I love about this, because like with you guys, so we all learn something every day. And I think history, just check out history. And I think the thing that really bothers me with how students learn here is that it's a watered down or changed just butchered version of history, okay? And I think, to me, that's so disingenuous for this reason. If you're going to teach something, you want to teach facts. You want to teach facts. And you find other people in other cultures know our history better than we do, because it's changed. And that's why you're going down a slippery slope when you start banning books, certain books. Now, if you, obviously pornography shouldn't be in our schools. We know that. Okay, that's not what we're talking about. But when you start talking about real history and you don't want to teach real history because someone might be offended and or someone might be inspired. Okay, that's what this is all about, ladies and gentlemen. So, speaking of history, how about a little music right now? Be back, and we're going to delve into Black history. This is Lady Songbird. She was on Thursday night. Mad Mike, Wild Bill Coast to Coast Show.
It's a feeling.
Yes, it is.
You cute.
Lady Songbird,
you already know.
You're the apple of my eye.
The way the clouds paint a picture. The way the ocean loves the shore. When I say that I love you, I mean it 100 times more. Sometimes I wish I could describe the way I love you.
We're back, the Boomerang Radio Show, you know, with Mike Ward and Dr. Reverend Rudolph Demery. And just text me, she's still trying to get in. So I asked her to log off and then log back on. So, yes. I want to get into, before I do that, we must send our prayers to Dr. Sims, share her, young niece, and I guess the dad was in a really bad car accident. It must have just happened yesterday or whatever it is. And the unfortunately, the dad passed. And the wait for Ann. Yes, Ann. Hey, Ann.
Hey.
Fine. We were just talking a little bit, playing a little music until you came on because I didn't want to start our segment until you you joined us. Dr. Sims will not be with us, and her niece and her father, and I don't know how many others were in the car, but they were in a really, really bad car accident. And the dad passed, and the little girl is hanging on for her life, you know, so.
Oh, God. And for the family.
Yeah, please, please,
please. Have mercy, Lord.
Yep. So I'm
How
sure.
How is the little girl?
Let me see if I can pull up her the text that she sent me earlier. Let's see. Good morning, William. I pray that all is well. I will not be there today. I will not be there today due to the fact we've just had a death in the family. Mm-hmm. Right now, my 8-year-old niece is in critical condition. Oh, man. Bad car accident. They were in a bad car accident, hit by an 18-wheeler.
Oh, wow.
And the baby's father was killed. Man, oh, man, oh, man. So, you know, that's information that you really, really don't want to hear or happen to anyone. Right. I don't want to hear that happen to people I don't know.
Right, right.
You know,
alone somebody you do know.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And so I'm sure that she wouldn't mind a text or a phone call from all of us, right?
Right, right.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Please reach out to her. Because sometimes, you know, you can say something that can really help someone during, troubling times like these. You know,
just being there.
Let them know that you support them. You're supporting them. Right. And this is the time where you let them know that, hey, I'm with you, sister. I'm with you, brother. So.
Right.
Yep.
Right.
Absolutely. Yes, we want to, we're going to right now start a segment because we haven't talked about this, in a while. And that's Black History. This is Black History Month. And I have a segment that I'm going to play, but I want Dr. Demery to go first. And who did you pull up, sir? And, we're talking about who are some Black people that you feel that made a major contribution to society? Yeah. Okay. Dr. Demery.
Well, I picked, a event, as opposed to a place, a person. And that was the same thing I did in church because we have two things in church that we do. I initiated a thing called, something stupid that Trump said.
It's been a long service.
And that was my brainchild. So he's
been all day.
Mad at me. And you know, the latest stupid thing that he said was we talked about NATO and he made an idiot of himself talking about, he was going to pull out of NATO and all this other kind of stuff. And so anyway, but we also were doing a segment on Black History Month. And what I picked was an event. And that was this, to make a long story short. I picked the issue behind, because I was in the military and we've had several people on the show that have been in the military and whatnot. And that was this. How was it possible that many of the servicemen and women who served in the military in this country risked their lives. Many of them were killed. Many of them made great sacrifices. When they came back to this country, they were treated less than citizens. How was that possible? Well, a couple of reasons. One, a lot of them went in the military because they came from large families and they needed to help their parents out, so they went in the military. Mm-hmm. Second of all, they did it out of patriotism. And then lastly, they did it out of duty and a sense of honor to the country. And so my question was this that I posed to people and I posed to all of you. How was it possible that mm-hmm. they were able to do that? Well, it was out of a sense of honor, a love for this country, a love for the fact that, yes, things might be bad when we get back home. Jim Crow laws and whatnot, but there was always the hope. There was always the interest that things would get better.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of those servicemen and women, you know, numerous, from Colin Powell, who was the highest ranking African-American, all the way back down to the lowest private. All of them served their country with dignity and honor and risked their lives for situations that could not be, you know, redeemed. Mm-hmm. I mean, I told you the story about me when I had just graduated from chaplain school. We were in our dress whites. We had all spit and polished and everything. And I went to go visit a friend of mine down south. And we went to this Kentucky Fried Chicken, Kentucky Fried Chicken in Meridian, Mississippi.
Mm.
And we went up to the line to get some chicken, and the lady said, "You know, sir, there's two things in life I don't like, flies and the N-word." And she said, "I don't know which one I hate worse." And my friend that I was with, he just went off. You know, he just lost it. I said, "Look, man, you have to live here. I don't. I'm leaving tomorrow. So don't make a fool out of yourself." He says, "Oh, no, no, no. I'm going to have her fired. I'm going to have her thrown in jail." Because his father was a big wig in the city. And so anyway, the point being was, it doesn't matter what people thought about me as an individual. The thing that bothered me the most is that she disrespected the uniform and what it stood for. So the point being is that I think a lot of our servicemen and women who served this country honorably and with distinction, from the Tuskegee Airmen all the way down to the 68th, 88th, who I mentioned, the black women who got the mail system rolling in Europe. A lot of people don't even know about that. Served admirably and served with distinction and honor, and many of them were treated like second-class citizens, and they did it because of honor and service to the country.
All right. You know what, Dr. Demery? And thank you for everything that you contributed to this country too in your service. This same woman, obviously racist, bigoted, and that had to have been brewing in her for a long time, meaning that someone taught her that, and it festered. Absolutely. And it festered and it festered. I'm going to say this. I bet you and your friend, if she had a medical emergency on the spot right then, you'd been the first to help her. Would have been the first to help her. You know, and how dare anyone, like you said, dishonor anyone like that, okay? And especially on top of that, someone who went and fought for them, protected her behind and her family's behind, okay? I mean, that is a shame. And you, and there's story and after story after story about that, Mike, and about that. I know many service members, and I have a first cousin who served and retired as a full bird colonel. I have a brother who served and retired as a master sergeant, in the Air Force. Okay. I have another brother that two other brothers that served in the Army. My granddaughter right now is in the Army. My brothers, my first cousins, my nephew, just made, captain in the Army. So we, and my son served in the Navy. And to hear that, and you're right, and they served proudly. They served proudly. So, I mean, how dare treat another human being like that, much less someone who went out there and served to protect you. Okay. So thank you for that, Dr. Demery. Thanks again, my friend. So,
could I add a little something to?
Yeah, Dr. please go Demery's on.
And I promise I'll be brief. Not only was that shameful and evil, but look at how our veterans are still treated today. Look at how many of them are on the streets. Look at how many of them can't get the mental health, the physical health, the spiritual health that they need. So this is not something that was just a sliver of time. This continues. And my former wife was at the VA. Her last, well, gosh, she spent 40 years doing optical nurse and all of that, but she would come home every day almost in tears and tell me how horrible she thought that institution was treating the vets. And that's just her perspective from working with the VA. Mm-hmm. So I'll leave you with that. Thanks for letting me give my input.
And Mike, your dad was a colonel in the Army?
Yeah, he was a major during World War II, going through France, met my mother in France because she actually fought with an artillery crew. She was with Her Majesty's Royal Service. And they met and corresponded by letter after that. And she came over on the original Queen Mary in 1949, where my dad met her in New York. And they drove across country, met family members. And then she lived with his mom, my grandmother, until they were married in 49. And the rest is kind of history.
Right. Wow. Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely. Yep. So
he retired out as a bird colonel. Yeah.
Okay. So I want to, let's go to Ann first. Next. And then toss it over to Mike.
Well, I guess it's no surprise that a lot of my heroes are going to have law degrees. Barack Obama, Michelle Obama, Kamala Harris, Ketanji Brown Jackson. They're all attorneys and they're all trailblazers. Of course, we know Barack Obama is the first African-American male to be president of the United States. His wife was first lady, both of them attorneys. And of course, Ketanji Brown Jackson, we know she's the first African-American woman appointed to the Supreme Court, serving beautifully. Kamala Harris, my shero, she is the first of so many things. She was the first African-American woman and first woman to serve as California's Attorney General. And then she was appointed, I believe, was she the first woman to be appointed to the Senate from California? I know she was like the second woman to go to the Senate.
I believe she was first from California, yes.
Yes. So then you have her doing that. And now she's a triple threat because she's the first African American woman to be Vice President of the United States, as well as the first woman and first person of Southeast Asian descent to be there. So she has kicked down single-handedly a whole lot of the glass ceilings by herself. And the fact, you know, that she is the first of so many things, on the one hand, it's a source of pride, and then on the other hand, it's a source of sadness because, I mean, we're talking about her becoming Attorney General, I believe it was 2010. So that was just 14 years ago. And then she was elected to the Senate in 2016. That was when Trump was running for office. So, it's sad that those things are very recent history. And here we are in 2024. But at the same time, it's a source of pride. So those are my modern day, heroes who are still breaking down barriers and doing so much to elevate, the African American. My hat's off to them. Oh, okay. Well, anybody,
William's doing a sound check.
Okay, well, Mike, I guess it's your turn. who do you look up to?
Oh, wow. I need William here for this.
Well, I do as a stand-in or Reverend Demery.
No, because part of what I have to say it addresses William to some degree. But when William sent out his text today about picking significant people that were black that truly enriched our society, I immediately had one in my head because I've always thought, what a magnificent story this person has. Mm-hmm. And, but then I went and I researched a little bit because I like to know a little bit about what I'm talking about. And I researched that topic exactly. And I was surprised that, the one person I picked wasn't in the top 50 of significant, enrichment of society. And so that's one of the people I'm going to talk about today. Where's William?
Well, I guess we can, bounce it back to Reverend Demery. I know I had a bunch of different people I mentioned. Was there somebody else?
Please go ahead. When William gets back, I've got a little something for William, if you guys know what I mean.
Not a problem. Were there any other heroes, heroic people, that you thought about, Reverend Demery, in terms of Black history? I can't hear
your mic's muted.
Okay, how about now? I had myself muted. Sorry about that. Yeah, there is one that comes to mind who we are all familiar with, particularly with the movies that have come out lately, and that is the Reverend C.L. Franklin. And I pick him because he was such a pivotal force in Black preaching. And the thing about it is, Black history is American history.
Yes.
And without Black history, you wouldn't have American history. Without American history, you wouldn't have Black history. So I want to declare that first of all. But Cleveland was so pivotal because he has been often coined as the father of Black preaching, which in some way he was. I think it went on and occurred before he came on the scene, but he made it popular. And that was that famous style that we call hooping. I mean, I have to catch myself sometimes that I start hooping when I'm preaching. And if you ever want to get an idea of what that style of preaching is like, just go to a Black church. And you'll get an idea of what that style is. It's singing in sermon and sermon in singing. That's the best ways of describing it. W.D. Du Bois said that there's a message in the song and the song in the message. And it's a unique style of American art form, but it's also a spiritual thing. I'll end with this. If you want to get a little idea of what hooping is about, when you listen to that speech that Martin Luther King gave, and that famous speech, he took us to church. And you listen to that, that is a form of the style that I'm talking about. You know the story behind that, where Mahalia Jackson was behind him and he had this manuscript that he was going to preach, and Mahalia Jackson said, and she moved him, and she said, "Martin, tell him about the dream. Martin, tell him about the dream." He closed his notes up and he took us to church. That's when he started preaching. And when you look at him, you can kind of begin to see that glow that took place and kind of covered him, almost like the transfiguration, nearly like that, because he was transformed in that moment. And that's why he was able to deliver, you know, one of the greatest speeches and one of the greatest sermons in American history.
Agreed. It's amazing how you hear people use, and I must say this, because people, the way I put it, they blaspheme the speech. I've heard people use it in the context of so many wrong things, but the speech was so powerful that we all know it. I mean, we all do, which is why, you know, some of the dumbest jokers on the block can take the speech and use it to talk about, you know, their love of potato chips or something stupid like that, which is what I mean by blaspheming the speech. But you just can't help it. It resonates with everybody to this day. Listening to his delivery of it, he was such an awesome orator. He just knew how to touch your spirit, or rather he had a gifting for touching your spirit. And that speech still does, to this very day. Another person who is an awesome orator is Barack Obama. When that man talks, you just can't help but to listen. He has a way of commanding your attention. But not only that, you want to listen to him. Because the things that he says, he number one knows what he's talking about, which makes it so much easier. I don't know how we can go from him who was such a great orator to this person who can't make, you know, second grade sentences sound right. But that's what we did between 44 and 45. But he's just an awesome orator, and his wife compliments him very well. Michelle Obama also, commands your attention, and she uplifts you, whenever she speaks. Both of them are just, I guess I should say that they both know how to use rhetoric in a way that not only encourages you, and uplifts you, but it motivates you, you know, motivates you to want to do more, to want to take action, which is why I think they were so successful, during their time in the White House.
And he was frat. He was frat.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was.
They're both Michelle and both Michelle and Barack are very easy to listen to. That's, you know, some people are work to be around. Some people are work to listen to. And it's like, God, just like nails on a chalkboard. Both of those people, they knew how to command that audience. They knew how to make you comfortable with what they were saying. Mm-hmm. And, they had, good points. And like you said, they were very, very well versed in what they had to say. Mm-hmm. So, can I take it, Ann?
Go ahead.
Now that William decided to end his sound check.
Yes. Go right ahead.
Let me tell you what happened for real. I did take a sound check, but I just had the delivery of some new popcorn that just came in.
You took a lunch break, really?
I was listening to you guys. I said, okay, I can enjoy this popcorn. Now I'm not a popcorn lover. I hate butter popcorn, but I like caramel popcorn. I like cheese flavored popcorn, right? And it was for a good cause. Okay. My good friend, Beverly Haynes, Dr. Denver, you know her, right? Mm-hmm. Great singer. Now she's raising money for a charity. And so the popcorn just came in. And so I said, oh man, okay, I'm going to let them talk. Well, all three of them got big mouths. They can carry this.
Okay. You know, it's really a shame, William, that delivery wasn't your 60-day supply of Accurate.
Well, the 60-day supply of Accurate did come in, but I sent it back. I said, return to the sender. I don't need it.
As evidenced by the fact that you are eating during the show.
I turned off my microphone.
Uh-huh.
I turned off my camera.
Yeah.
And I just want to give you fine people more time.
Right. That's what it was. We're going to go with that.
So yeah. When William sent out his text today with this, a brilliant idea, by the way, I think this is a really good topic for Boomerang. You know, I had to think about, okay, you know, who do I pick that are significant black males that contributed greatly to our society? William, where's your camera, William?
He's eating again.
No, I need his camera on. So just leave your camera on for just a second here, William. So I thought about the two most significant black male in society that had really contributed greatly to our society. And I thought, oh, this is easy. I got Judge Clarence Thomas and I've got Bill Clinton.
Oh my gosh. Stop. You did not.
Did you see
not.
William's face?
You did not do that. Yeah.
I had to exit on that.
What?
Oh Lord. Okay. He didn't see that. Mike,
so
you
now,
were...
now I'll be serious.
Okay. Thank you.
But immediately when William sent that text, I already had somebody in my head because I've known the story of this gentleman for quite a long time. And I think it's significant. Mm-hmm. Let me see, where am I going to go? Let me change screens here for a second.
Okay.
I'm going to kill off my camera because I'm going to read off my computer. So forgive me for shutting down my camera.
No problem.
There we go. So this gentleman, when William sent this out, I went and I did a little research because I wanted to like see, okay, well, let's look up all these people, even though I had the primary one in my head. And I looked up the 50 most significant black people in American society, and this man wasn't even in the top 50. And I'm appalled by that. So I'm going to read you a little bit of the story here. I don't like to read on camera and stuff, but I'll give it my best because I scan when I read because I have to read so much material. and my dyslexia kicks in a little bit here or there, so I'm going to try to go slow and get through it.
Okay.
Dr. Charles Drew, a pioneer in blood transfusions. Mm-hmm. Dr. Richard Drew, Charles Richard Drew, born June 3rd of 1904. See, this is my dyslexia kicking in. Mm-hmm. And lived until April 1st of 1950, was an American surgeon, educator, and pioneer medical researcher on blood transfusions. Mm-hmm. He discovered that plasma had a longer shelf life than blood and could be separated to be used in transfusions. His work not only saved thousands during World War II, it also laid the groundwork for long-term blood preservation and storage techniques that have saved countless lives since. Let me change pages here. He's born in Washington, D.C. in 04. I'm going to scan through this real quick here because I don't want to take up a bunch of time. Dunbar High School, good student, outstanding athlete, excellent at football, basketball, baseball, and track. He received an athletic scholarship to Amherst College in Massachusetts, where he played football and was on the track and field team. So not only mentally very astute and brilliant, but physically quite the athlete. Mm-hmm. Undergraduate school, medical school, professor of chemistry and biology, first athletic director and football coach at the historical black private Morgan College in Baltimore, Maryland, now Morgan State University. In 1928, Drew went to medical school at McGill University in Montreal, Canada. While at McGill, he became interested in blood transfusions, which eventually became a lifelong work. In 1933, he graduated with a doctoral in medicine and surgery degree. Again, I'm going to scan through this quickly because it's quite long. Howard University, graduated postgraduate at Columbia University, earned his doctor of science at surgery in 1940. His groundbreaking doctoral thesis was called, quote, Banked Blood, a Study in Blood Preservation, end quote. He was the first African American to earn a medical doctorate from Columbia.
Wow.
During World War II, as casualties mounted, the need for blood increased. As the leading authority in blood transfusions, Drew was recruited to be the medical director of the Board for Britain Project and was tasked with creating a blood bank for Britain soldiers and civilians. Based in New York City, Drew set up a system for recruiting volunteers to donate blood which would be shipped overseas. Drawing on Drew's research, the project separated plasma, stored and tested it, and then shipped it to Britain through the Red Cross. The project was immensely, immensely successful. It collected over 14,500 blood donations and sent 5,000 liters of plasma to Britain. Got to change pages here. In January 41, the U.S. federal government asked the National Research Council and American Red Cross to establish a blood program, and Drew became the director of the new American Red Cross Blood Bank. Under Drew's leadership, the organizations were in charge of blood used by the U.S. Army and Navy for our troops. Here, this gets a little sad here. Drew's stint with the Red Cross, however, was short-lived. At the time, the Red Cross segregated blood by race, even though they acknowledged there was no scientific foundation for the practice.
Wow.
Instead, they defended their policy by arguing it was what the recipients wanted, but did not provide any evidence supporting this claim. As a result of this blatantly racist and discriminatory practice, Drew resigned. There's a man of character right there. Drew resigned and returned to Freeman's Hospital at Howard University. While Drew may be the best known for his groundbreaking research in the development of blood plasma, one of Drew's major legacies was teaching and training black medical students and advocating for more opportunities for black medical students and surgeons. Here's a good one right here. Between 1941 and 1950, so a 9-year span, more than half the black surgeons in the U.S. had studied under Dr. Drew. true.
Wow.
Praise the Lord. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Here's where it gets a little tragic here, and it's going to tie in with what's going on with Dr. Sims. When this came across me, and you were talking about Dr. Sims, I said, holy smokes, this just fits in with what's going on with Dr. Sims' life right now. Drew's life was tragically cut short on April 1st of 1950 when he was just 45 years old. While en route to a conference in, here's another word for you, Tuskegee. While en route to a conference in Tuskegee, Alabama, with three other black physicians, Drew was involved in a single car accident near Burlington, North Carolina. He was taken to a white hospital and given a blood transfusion, but his injuries were too severe and he died shortly after receiving treatment. The only other passenger who was seriously injured was Dr. John Ford, but he recovered. Now this is where I learned something today, because I thought the following, I believe this to be true and evidently it's not. A rumor spread that Drew had died because the hospital, the White Hospital, refused to give him a blood transfusion. Well, believable because it was not uncommon for black Americans to be denied treatment because of their race. This was a myth. Something Drew's daughter, then D.C. council member Charlene Drew Jarvis, talked about in a 1996 article. When speaking of Drew's life and accomplishment, Dr. I'm going to mess up this name. Mordecai W. Johnson, president of Howard University from 1926 to 1960. Wow, what a stint. Said, and I quote here, "Here we have what rarely happens in history." I'm going to repeat that. "Here we have what rarely happens in history. A life which crowds into a handful of years, significant with great men will never, men will never forget." Wow. So this man, I'm going to extrapolate from here. This man was surely, his research and his life caused millions of people to survive through blood transfusions and through his teaching to other students of his, whether they were black or white, doesn't matter. But he taught so many people to save lives. What he created in blood transfusions saved, without a doubt, multiple millions of lives. And I would think at this point, his teaching and his blood transfusions worldwide have probably close to saving maybe even a billion people. And why this gentleman wasn't in the top 50 when I did research earlier today, why he wasn't in the top 50 of significant input from black people in America, I don't quite understand.
Right.
So I'm a little upset about this, but I'm so thankful this man had his mark on our society. Yep. So there's my number one. There's my one number one. Back to you. And I guess I'm going to skip Judge Clarence Thomas.
thank you for that. Yeah, we really appreciate that. Yeah, thanks for sparing us. And Mike, if you have more, because we're going to go around. Great. And I have the lady that I want to honor. And I think I mentioned her before. That was Bessie Coleman. The first black female pilot. She was born January the 26th, 1892. Okay. And she died April 30th, 1926. American civil aviator. The problem is she could not get a license here in this country.
Had to go to France.
She had to go to France. Okay. She was born in Atlanta, Texas. I didn't know they had an Atlanta, Texas. There's so many cities that we have no idea what the names are, right? And some of these places have the weirdest names, right? You go to Mississippi. Did you guys ever heard of Boogie Bottom, Mississippi?
Stop it.
I have now.
That's a true story. You've heard of Why Not, Mississippi?
Stop it. Didn't I say stop? Listen to me.
Okay,
stop.
And I have the receipts. David Ruffin was born in Why Not, Mississippi. David Ruffin of the Temptations was born in Why Not, Mississippi. And a really good friend of mine was born in Boogie Bottom, Mississippi. Okay, so.
Wow.
She was born to a family of sharecroppers in Texas. Coleman worked in the cotton fields at a young age while also studying in a small segregated school. She attended one term of college at Langston University. Coleman developed an early interest in flying, but African Americans, Native Americans, and women had no flight training opportunities in the United States, so she saved and obtained sponsorships in Chicago to go to France. I mean, this young lady, she was so enamored, and I think she worked in her cousin's or someone's barbershop doing some other things also just getting money. Then she became a high profile pilot in notoriously dangerous air shows. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. In the United States, she was popular, and also known as Queen Bess and Brave Bessie, and hoped to start a school for African-American flyers. Coleman died in a plane crash, honoring her role. I had read in another story that I guess she was doing a stunt and her seatbelt broke.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's what, so that's, I don't know what you would call it, a conflict or not. But I want to stop right there because I want to go back to Dr. Demery and then back to Mike, and I have something that I'm going to add at the end. Mike texted on something. Now, and I also had heard the story about Dr. Drew. I had heard the story, you know, and I believed it too, that he, that they refused to give him a transfusion. I'm saying, wait, hold, this is really hospital, weird. Yeah.
So I'm shocked they even took him, because a lot of the time, especially in the South, Black people weren't even admitted to the hospital unless it was a segregated hospital, place for them to go.
Okay, and
so
I'm thinking
that is surprising.
I'm thinking that he probably may have gotten a pass because they knew who he was, or maybe I don't know.
I
don't know. But anyway, I have no information regarding that. But the point that I'm making is, see what we miss out on if we do not, if we're not inclusive. Because all of us, everyone, every human being has something good to offer.
Right.
Okay. Right. And it doesn't matter if there's a white doctor that's going to save my life. Hey, bro, come on over here. Okay. Chinese, I don't care. I want the best doctor. And right now, and I can't believe 2024. That the level of discrimination is still going on. Matter of fact, who did this? Candace Owens. Dr. Demery?
Not today.
Oh, okay, okay.
No,
and,
not today.
And her and this other clown, Ben Shapiro. They were talking about, and if you had, they were saying the quiet part out loud when they were talking about, the subject came up about this Black female pilot. I think she was the youngest Black female pilot here in the United States now. And how is it United, or is it United that wants to make their pilots? They want to have more diversity in the cockpit. Is that is that the United, Dr. Demery? Okay. And these people, you know, they're throwing jabs at it.
Right,
they're throwing jabs like, oh yeah, okay. In other words, they and Ben almost came out and said that he did not want a diverse cockpit. Candace Owens came in there and she tried to clean it up a little bit by saying, well, do we really want women flying planes?
Look, William, didn't I say don't do this today? This is supposed to be positive.
Okay,
and you're taking me there.
Oh, okay.
You are taking
me there. No, I just want to make a point, and I promise to pass it on to you, and I promise, okay. But what I'm saying is, I just want to hitchhike and piggyback off what Mike was saying there. I'm saying that the positive thing is, and the most positive thing to do, you want diversity as much as you can get it, because, hey, this white guy may not be able to do what this Black guy can do, and the Black guy may not be able to do what the white guy can do, and the Chinese, you know, get the best person and stop discriminating based on, oh, he's Black. I don't want him flying. Man, look, most of the time I get on a plane, I don't even see the pilot. So you don't know who's flying it.
Right. And not only that, I believe Dr. Charles Drew and, my next person, Dr. Elijah McCoy, I don't think he was a doctor, but he was an inventor, Elijah mm-hmm. McCoy. They are evidence of what society probably missed out on
yep.
when we